Hello.
Good evening, and welcome to another Fireside Chat. This is your host, Zany Mystic. Tonight's guest is Roy Anthony Shabla. Roy is a spiritual consultant and healer, a meditation teacher, and a, as I hope I say this right, feng shui master.
Right.
Thank you, Roy. His private practice is in the Los Angeles area, and his international workshops for practitioners are also there, and his lectures on spiritual healing have changed the lives of thousands of people. He is also founder of BlessTheWorld.com, and he's developed his line of spiritual remedies. He has been meditating and writing since childhood and was the youngest professional editor-publisher in the country. His poetry is the result of meditation, and excerpts have been published in the monthly newsletter at www.blesstheworld.com. So let's welcome this multifaceted healer, writer, and poet to the show by welcoming Roy right now. Hi, Roy. How are you?
Hello. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. You know, I really loved reading your poetry. They were, it just goes right to the heart.
Thank you.
How long did it take you to develop your muse? Your life.
Yeah, I guess that's a hard question. I've been meditating since I was about 8 years old.
Really?
And I've been writing since that time. The book which you read is the product of about a year.
Wow.
About a year's work.
Uh-huh.
But, of course, it has roots that go back to my childhood and earlier.
Uh-huh. Tell us a little bit about your childhood and what was it like to be an eight-year-old with these urges to write? I mean, that surely is unusual, right?
Well, I grew up in the suburbs of Los Angeles,
okay,
where I still live.
Oh.
And, you know, a white boy in a middle-class white neighborhood.
Me too.
And a Catholic upbringing.
Oh, okay.
And I went to Catholic school.
Uh-huh.
And around the age of eight, I was, for lack of a better, you know, phraseology and just, I think because your audience would appreciate it, I was visited by gurus and saints.
Oh.
And holy men in the way that someone would go to search for the next incarnation of the Dalai Lama or the next incarnation of any of the great lamas.
Uh-huh.
And through those visitations is how I began meditating, because I began that sort of spiritual training.
Mm.
And unfortunately, I was sort of like a bad Xerox of a bodhisattva. you know, I've got all the traits, but they don't quite come through, you know, clearly.
Uh-huh.
And
I love it.
So what do you do?
Yeah, exactly. What's he going to do?
And so as part of that spiritual training, meditation and writing are always basic to it.
Huh.
And so I have been doing that all my life.
Wow.
To a greater or lesser degree. My past lives settle primarily in the kind of hermit meditator, you know, isolated healer, kind of lifestyle. I have a Virgo North Node for people who know their astrology, and you deal very much with isolation,
yeah,
with meditation, with psychic abilities.
Yeah.
And so in this lifetime, I've really tried to make an effort to be much more in the real world and in the civilized world. I haven't quite made it. I still live in the suburbs instead of the city.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's a lot closer than living in the country or on a mountaintop.
Right, right. What did the gurus and saints lead you to believe? I mean, do you feel that you're here at this time for a particular reason? I mean, why now? Why 2007?
What I came to understand was that we had entered a period of spirituality where things were going to be different. Mm-hmm. And maybe I'm not the first person to say this, but for the last few thousand years, spirituality has been behind the monastery doors, or it has been on the hilltop, or
exactly.
It has been somewhere isolated.
Yeah.
And what I came to understand was that this kind of lifestyle was to be brought into the public.
Yeah, yeah.
That you were to be a spiritual person in the world,
yeah.
In society, and that other people could do that, and people could have a family,
yes.
And be spiritual people.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there have been traditions of that, and yet many of those traditions have been suppressed or forgotten because they're not quite as interesting and as exciting as the...
Or as money-making,
exactly. You know, the communities where people chose to, you know, have small, simple houses all in what would be considered a suburb.
Yeah.
You know, but...
And love each other.
Yeah, and love each other and be kind, you know, and it's like, oh my goodness, we're going to give that a shot again before it's all over.
Yeah. Well, that explains that. You know, I was in an esoteric school when I was in my 20s, Gurdjieff Ospensky School, and, you know, so I learned that, you know, according to Gurdjieff, you know, you had to have an esoteric school. You had to find one. You could only get this information through schools. And over the years, you know, since having left a school, of course they say that you die if you leave a school, but...
Once again, how do you continue the tradition and pay the bills?
Yeah, thank you. I've learned that, you know, that the spirituality is moving into society and that schools are basically, they're not obsolete, you know, they still have value, but that there's a kind of a quickening occurring, or a spiritual quickening, and it's a happening now kind of thing, and it's coming to everybody. So, well, as you said, the housewife or, you know, the normal quote-unquote person is able to marry religion, or not religion, spirituality and life. And live it and begin to care about other people.
There are traditions in India that still have this philosophy, but
right.
It's just not very popular.
Right.
And we, especially in the West here, we don't see a lot of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it has become popular to take yoga.
Yeah.
To
yeah.
You know, recycle.
Right.
To,
right.
You know, eat health food and. Maybe not meditate, because my class is awfully small, but to have some sort of inkling in those directions, and that's great, and that's wonderful.
Yeah.
But there is still a great separation between what we are capable of and what we are manifesting. And part of it is, at least in you know... once again, I live in the Los Angeles area. If you think of a big city, if you think of New York, these are areas that have two things.
Mm.
One, they have a lot of exchange of ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So they may be more liberal. They may be more intellectual, possibly, you know, just as a general statement. On the other hand, they're also much more fast-paced.
Oh, yeah.
And so while you have this information... available to you about spirituality other than what how you were raised, you kind of don't have the time for it.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
You know, people spend about 60 hours working their 40-hour week.
Yeah, yeah.
And in that, you know, you hardly have time to even make food, which to me, the making of your food is a spiritual act.
Yes, it could be a sacred thing.
It's a very great meditation, and I used to give this to my students years ago.
Wow.
Take a bag of carrots and cut it up.
Wow.
And if you don't feel better, or if you're not doing better, or if you don't have a little bit of clarity, get another bag of carrots.
Wow, I like that.
And you just keep cutting carrots until you achieve some sort of, you know, balance for the moment.
Yeah, that's great.
We don't live in a lifestyle right now where people can sit and cut up a bag of carrots.
Yeah, you're right.
they drive through someplace and eat from the bag.
Right, right. Or they have their maid to cut the carrots or whatever.
Well, yeah, there you go.
And, you know, and you're down there. I mean, I lived in Los Angeles in the Hollywood area many years ago when I was first beginning my journey. It's so busy down there, and you've got all the movie business and people trying to be in the movies and people who are in the movies. And, you know, that's quite a consuming lifestyle. So, you know, we tend to compartmentalize and, you know, as you said, there's no time to do anything. Our spirituality has to be, you know, 5 minutes, you know.
Right.
Get your daily dose.
Exactly.
You know, go to church. Now there's no time to even do that, so you've got to kind of do it on your headphones.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, we come into a lifestyle where we have available to us information and, you know, there's a yoga studio and a temple of one form or another on every corner in Los Angeles.
Really?
They've replaced the gas stations and the banks because no one can afford either one of those.
Huh.
And yet you can't, I mean, I go to yoga class and there's two or three people there.
Oh, wow.
You know, my meditation class, if I get 9, 10 people, it's packed. You know, and I have clients who have been with me for 10 years, and they're like, yes, I'm coming to class. And, you know, in 10 years, they still haven't made it.
Oh, really?
It's, you know, it's the kind of thing where people just can't get it into their routine.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the pattern hasn't been there.
Yeah.
And yet, the people that do come to my class feel like they can't make it through the week without it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's their repose, their balance, it's their, you know, remedial work in a lot of ways.
Oh, yeah.
It's their healing.
Yeah.
We do a lot of work with releasing karma.
Uh-huh.
And the depth of karma is so great. You know, the word is now used quite a bit,
uh-huh.
but people don't realize that we have karma from this life, from today.
Oh,
we have karma from past lives. We have hereditary karma.
Oh.
Passed down through the lineage.
Yeah.
We have group karma.
Yeah.
Traditionally, group karma is considered like if you're a shoemaker, then all shoemakers have this karma. You know,
yeah.
You can, and in some ways, there's a truth to that. If you think of how people who made hats got mercury poisoning.
Huh.
Okay, so all people, so that group had that kind of karma. But we also have group karma as living in Los Angeles, or group karma as being on the planet Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And so the depth and variety of these that we carry,
mm-hmm.
that we manifest, and to be doing nothing about them just bogs you down even more so that you become a sort of manifestation of inertia,
mm-hmm.
and to get up to go to a meditation class,
mm-hmm.
or to a yoga class where you might meditate,
mm-hmm.
or a Tai Chi class becomes almost impossible.
You almost have to do drugs to just get to your meditation class.
There you go, exactly.
Have you noticed any commonalities in the clients that you've worked with over the years? Is anything cropping up lately?
My clients are 99% female.
Okay.
They are mostly, I don't want to say middle age because that would make me feel old. They are mostly, you know, a little more than 20.
Okay.
And a little less than 60.
Oh, all right.
And they have had they still see conventional doctors.
Yeah.
However, they do almost nothing they say. It's occasionally for a checkup or for information. They've been maybe dismissed by the conventional medical community. And they know in their heart somewhere that the physical body is sort of not where the problem lies.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they come to me as a spiritual healer to work on, okay, they come for, you know, a digestion problem because they've got to say something why they're coming to me, you know, in their sort of everyday consciousness. They've got to, you know, come up with something. But deep down, they know that they're there because they want out of their marriage or they hate their job.
Right.
Or they really should be an artist instead of, you know, an engineer or,
right.
you know, whatever, a bookkeeper, whatever the imbalance is.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so they come and forget about their digestion, which, of course, will improve. as we work together, and we primarily work on the spiritual issues. Of course, depending on someone's karma and willingness to let go of it, people make progress very quickly.
Right, right.
On the other hand, I've had people with me for 10, 15 years.
Do you feel that the soul is the journey? How do you see the soul's journey on this planet? I mean, why do we come here to? Why do we incarnate in the first place and take on this burden?
So it's a really interesting question, and I believe it's a really simple question.
Okay.
And I'd like to sort of look at it from another perspective.
Okay.
Having some Zen training and in the past sort of unofficially teaching a Zen class at university, you're often encountered with the question of being an enlightened man.
Okay.
I'm a teacher and a healer, so am I enlightened? And of course, you know that it's a rude question to ask anyone. and someone who is enlightened is not going to...
Right.
Is not going to, you know, broadcast that.
Right, right.
You know, the Buddha said that he was enlightened.
Right.
And out of respect and dignity and humbleness, you don't say that.
Right.
On the other hand, I believe that everyone is enlightened.
Okay.
I believe that everyone is enlightened, everyone who's listening right now, and even you. And what we do in our lives is put all our energy into forgetting that.
Huh. Wow.
So think about someone who is, you know, you're laying on the sofa.
Okay.
And all of a sudden someone has a buzzsaw and they're sawing the whole front wall out of your house.
Okay.
And then a crane is picking you up because you now weigh 900 pounds.
Ooh.
Now, to get to weigh 900 pounds, how much do you have to suppress of your own spirituality,
yeah,
of your own consciousness, of your own logic,
yeah,
to get to that point where the only way you can get off the sofa is for a crane to come through the wall?
Wow.
So it's not a surprise. We pretend like it's a surprise that we woke
right
up one day weighing 900 pounds.
Right.
But it's not a surprise. Every single moment of our lives,
yeah,
we know what we are doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And we do our best to suppress the appreciation of that. I think in my book there's a line that says, I've been asleep all my life. It takes a lot of effort to ignore God.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
Everything around us, every aspect is God.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing about being an atheist, I could get into and just, I mean, atheism is a vocabulary problem. Because if you don't believe in the chair you're sitting on,
yeah,
then you don't believe in God.
Right.
But you're sitting on a chair, so you've got some belief in it.
Exactly.
Your problem with God is that you say you don't believe in it, but you also choose the words to define it.
Yeah.
And you choose these words to define it, and then you say, I don't believe in it. Well, that doesn't even make sense.
Don't you think there's also an ego problem there with atheism?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and a control issue.
Yeah, which, lots of issues.
Which, of course, is based in fear.
Right, right. Yeah, thank you for throwing that
one. But this idea of enlightenment and ignoring God, the idea that you were asking of the soul's journey here on the planet, basically, we're here to get the hell out of our own way. Okay?
I like that.
There's nobody, who believes that eating a cheeseburger and fries every day for lunch and dinner, no matter what the commercials on TV tell you, is a good thing.
Yeah.
But people manage to suppress that information.
Yep. Yep.
In themselves.
Yeah.
Denial is a great, great, strong motivation in people's lives.
Oh, absolutely.
A great activity.
Yeah.
And so your question of asking what is the soul's purpose, what is the soul's journey, it's really just to be able to look at ourselves with clarity.
Yeah.
To be able to look at ourselves with love and appreciation.
Yeah.
Because everything from the atheism that we're talking about to the 900 pounds is a lack of clarity of how we should love ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And if we could actually see ourselves, because we have so many filters on, we don't, that love would be spontaneous and natural. You don't have to work at it. It's not like, you know, an ugly dog that you've got to, you know, sort of muster up a little energy for, and then it warms up to you and you warm up to it, et cetera, et cetera. You know, you love yourself.
Right.
It's all of the things that we do to suppress that, and that's what the soul's journey is, to let go of all of those things.
Yeah. Interesting. It almost seems as if we, you know, all those layers of the onion that we're trying to peel away, we put them there in the first place.
Absolutely.
You know?
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
And that is the karma that I'm talking about.
Oh, okay.
So we have hereditary karma.
Hmm.
And I'll say people, I'll have people that I don't know them. I don't know their family history. I don't know anything about them.
Hmm.
And I'll look at their fingertips because I do this technique where you look at the light coming out of the fingertips, and whichever one has the light blocked, that pertains to different things.
Okay.
And it pertains to hereditary karma. So I'll say, well, your mother or your grandmother, you know, behaved this way. And they're like, how do you know that? Well, I'm like, how do you not know that? How are you not doing anything about it? You've been carrying this, and it's manifesting in your life, and it's manifesting in this way.
Right, right.
Well, that's one layer of the onion.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and the fact that you decided to eat a cheeseburger for lunch, that's another layer of onion. That's an everyday karma you're taking on. And, you know, if you get heart disease or diabetes from it, that's the result of that karma of eating that way.
Right, right.
And you have a past life karma. You know, with my Virgo North Node of isolation and hermit and all of those kinds of things, it's very difficult to manifest a relationship. Because my whole energy is about isolation. I've lived alone in a 3-bedroom house most of my adult life.
Huh.
Okay, and I do live in the suburbs, but I haven't quite made it into the city yet. I have a very conscious effort of doing that, but, you know, we don't release these things instantly, even when we think about them.
Yeah.
You know, the Hindus say it takes hundreds of thousands of lifetimes to evolve.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the new age, it's like, oh, you're going to be released of all your karma in this lifetime, and you're going to transcend.
It doesn't
That's a
happen
cute one.
Like that.
Isn't
it?
That adorable?
Yeah. What's with all these people with the new age, you know, stuff that, you know, promise instant results and, you know, just do my DNA unraveling and we'll have you fixed in no time?
Well,
is that
about
making money or what?
In all honesty, I've never met a practitioner in any of these modalities, whatever you want to call them, New Age modalities, spiritual modalities, psychic ones. I've never met one who wasn't sincere.
Right, right, right. No, that's true.
If you wanted to be out there for money, you could do something most likely that's more of a money maker.
Right, you're right, you're right.
On the other hand, we all, myself included, even though I really try to be conscious about the fact, we all filter our philosophy and our spirituality through our own experiences.
Right.
And most of us were raised in a Judeo-Christian, white, middle-class, Western society.
Yep.
And the basis of those things are hell, fire, and brimstone.
Oh, yeah.
And
where does that come from?
The backlash to that is peace, love, and macrame. And so the New Age, except for a little brief period in the 80s, when, you know, you turn all of your clients into victims. Why did you create that cancer?
Oh,
you did this. Why did you do this? We need to talk about why. You know, it's like, how disempowering.
Yeah.
Luckily, a lot of that is going by the wayside.
Yeah, thank goodness.
But this reaction against the hellfire and brimstone tradition has led to a very, in some ways, superficial, you know, put your quarter in, get your lollipop in forgiveness, and, you know, go on your way happily ever after.
Go to the confessional.
And the people are not happy.
Right.
You know, also in my book, I talk about people buying the God illusion.
Mm-hmm.
The illusion of God, the illusion of health, the illusion of happiness.
Mm.
And you sell more and more of that if that's what you sell,
mm-hmm.
because it never really satisfies, it never really works.
Well, you bring up an interesting point about the illusion, and avatars throughout the ages have talked about this. How do we actually know what's real?
You probably don't.
Oh, great.
That'll be $50, please.
Thanks.
But what you do know,
yeah,
is what is present.
Okay.
What is grounded.
Right.
And so right now we're entering the cold and flu season. And half of my clients say that they do not have a cold and flu yet. They have, you know, fatigue that they want to sleep all afternoon,
uh-huh,
and their spine aches and maybe has a chill, and et cetera, et cetera.
Well,
but they don't have a cold.
LA. That's,
you know,
my remedy for that.
And and they go to work, and they want me to treat them.
Oh my.
So that they can go to work. And I say, A, you're sick.
Right. Take some time.
And B,
heal.
Why will you not slow down?
Yeah.
So in the Zen tradition,
yeah,
the illness is appreciated for what it is. If you have a cold, you stay in bed.
Thank
you. You drink hot tea. You maybe you write a poem.
Oh, yeah.
But you are dealing with what is present. You,
yeah,
are not ignoring it or suppressing it. You are not running to work even though you're ill.
Your body is saying something. It's giving you a message.
Well, exactly. And so this is what, for your perspective at this moment, this is what's real.
Yeah, yeah.
And so people want to know, such as your question, you know, how do we know what's real?
Mm.
Well, start with what you know is real.
Right, right.
Start in this place of your everyday.
Right.
What is the food in front of you? You know,
yeah,
once again, food and spirituality. Because I'm working on a book on the spiritual properties of food.
Oh.
And so food has always been very present in my mind.
Uh-huh.
But how often do you sit down to a plate of food and look up and it's gone and you don't realize you've eaten the whole thing? And don't even get me started with a bag of potato chips. So, you know, we're asking what's real.
Yeah.
And we're looking for reality to be something else. There's the Zen masters, they won't say I'm enlightened, but they write an enlightenment poem.
Right, right.
And one of the best ones is, now I'm enlightened and I'm still miserable. People expect,
yeah,
you know, spirituality to make them happy,
yeah, yeah,
or to change their lives,
yeah,
or something, and it doesn't. It just makes you present.
Yeah.
And that's really it. And once you become present, and once you become able to pay attention to what's around you,
yeah,
and pay attention to what is going on with yourself, you then release the illusion.
Ah.
So the illusion becomes lighter, more transparent, the more grounded you become.
Uh-huh.
The great symbol of the Buddha is a mountain, is a rock. And in certain Buddhist sects, instead of a figurative statue, you would have a stone, just an abstract, you know, almost like a Shinto, because of the groundedness of it.
Mm.
The whole concept is to be present. Whereas people are looking for reality to be something transcendent, they want these beautiful folklore stories of you know, mushroom
clouds
hallucinations.
Yeah.
And, you know, and beautiful ponies with wings and butterflies and flowers.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
You know, singing.
Yeah.
Well, you can have all of that. And there's people probably out there listening right now who are, you know, listening to this radio and looking at the fairies out the window. You know, seriously.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure.
And there's also someone sitting out there feeling more alone,
yeah,
than anyone has ever felt.
Yeah.
And there's also someone out there making a sandwich, have the TV on mute, and the phone is ringing. And they're going to pick up the phone and talk to a girlfriend and try to listen to this radio broadcast at the same time.
And you know who you are out there.
And
I
you know who you
right
are.
Now.
And the thing is, you are a spiritual seeker. You're
right.
Not tuning in to this radio show
right
haphazardly.
Right.
You know, it's not Monday Night Football.
Right, and there are no accidents.
And there, yes, absolutely, there are no accidents.
Exactly. And you know, one of the things about being present is maybe people don't like what they're being present to.
Yes, they absolutely do not.
And so,
but
maybe
what is your response to that? Is your response
right.
to reality the choice to take drugs and go into rehab and be splattered all over the tabloids?
Oh, don't
or is your response to be like, oh, you know what? I'm having a bad hair day. The boyfriend hasn't called me.
Right.
You know, whatever it is.
Right.
And
or I don't
I'm
even
sad
have
today.
A boyfriend to call me.
Well, there, exactly. But, you know, being sad
right.
is okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's okay
to be,
not to be perfect.
Yeah.
It's okay to, you know, not have a sort of 50s housewife life.
Right, right.
In a lot of ways, society, and maybe it's advertising or television or what, has made us feel like we're not good enough.
Oh, everything comes at us like that.
And what do you do when you're not good enough? You either try and hide it,
mm-hmm.
or hide yourself,
mm-hmm.
or forget about it.
Or pretend like you are somebody that you're not.
Exactly.
Even on Yahoo, it says, be a better blah, blah, blah. You know, and every day they have tips on how to be a better schmuck, you know. And it's like, come on, you know, why not just be yourself? What's with this being better? You know, you are what you are. Accept yourself as you are and just allow people to see who you are. And we're all hiding behind these masks.
Exactly.
It's so frustrating, you know, and it's so phony baloney. And how can anybody make any progress when they're constantly projecting an image that's not real?
Well, the interesting thing is that advertising, so billboards,
oh,
magazine and stuff, where the most beautiful people in the world are airbrushed
yes.
to look even more beautiful.
Thank you.
Even they do not look as
right.
good as their photographs do.
Right, and then they get them on both sides because then they go in the tabloids saying, look at Liz Taylor, how she really looks, or look at
right.
Michael Jackson
exactly.
with a screwed up face. But then you'll see him on another thing and he looks just like, you know, Madonna.
There you go. You know, and so
it's all hype.
You have this image of,
yeah.
or this information being forced at you that
oh, yeah.
you need to be beautiful. If you're not, we're going to ridicule you.
Yeah. And you'll be ostracized, and once you hit 25, your days are numbered.
It's terrible.
You're
and
an
it's
old
true.
Man. 26, it's over.
It's over. I'm only 28, but
oh really?
I've
well,
only
it's
been
over
28 for quite a while now.
Well, I'm not quite twice your age. Thank God. Some
well,
days I feel like it, but that's all right.
I won't know. Tell, and this broadcast can be erased from people's memories. So we'll just pick an age for you to stick at, and
okay,
that will be fine.
Well, 39, Jack Benny's age.
There you go.
Rochester. So what's happening today?
You mean like in the Zen thing, I'm sitting in my bathrobe.
Yes.
I have a very long string of pearls on.
Okay.
The big today, I mean, we are in Mercury retrograde, so
oh,
it's not
right.
a good
Thank
time
you.
To do
Thank you.
An interview.
That's right.
You know,
That's
communication right. is difficult. My internet has been down the entire day. I'm still out now as I'm looking at it.
Oh.
So, you know, Verizon had better get something going.
Yeah.
The planets this year have been going retrograde and direct one after the other, and they will continue
okay.
For the rest of the year. So we have a difficulty with that.
Yeah.
In you know, not that anything is bad, but
it's disturbing.
As humans, we have a difficult time with transition.
Yeah.
I mean, look at death.
Yeah.
You know, everyone believes, not everyone, but
right.
a lot of people believe that you're going to a better place, unless
yeah.
you've been eating the cheeseburgers. But, you know,
McDonald's in the sky.
You're in the Western tradition
yeah.
of Christianity, and, you know, you are going to heaven, et cetera, et cetera. And yet people are terrified to die. It's supposed to be better than here.
Yeah, why not be happy and blissful and support people through that transition? We were in denial right up until that moment. Then all of a sudden it's like, oh,
here it is.
I've done things different.
Yeah. I feel so much lighter. And so the transition of these planets is what is disturbing, not actually what they are doing, what they enhance.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a difficult thing. We're in the feng shui astrology right now. Actually, next month, so in the month will start, I'm going to say about the 8th of November, is going to be the month out of the year where any crap that you've been holding on to is going to kick you in the face.
Really?
We've had the past 2 months have been challenging.
Oh, no kidding.
Lot of stuff going on. And this month there are some blessings. I'm on the radio. I'm here for all of you right now.
Oh, how wonderful. That is truly a blessing.
Thank you very much for appreciating that. But next month is the month where all the good things will be amplified.
Okay.
All the bad things will be amplified.
Oh, great.
Okay. So if you have been in denial about whatever it is, it's going to kick you in the face.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
If you have been, you know, laying the groundwork for bliss, it's going to wash over you so wonderfully.
Oh, all right.
So, you know, and how many people out there are nervous right now? But we are in a time, not only astrologically this year, but spiritually for the last how many years that we've been talking about the age of Aquarius, the herald of the age of Aquarius, dawn of the age of Aquarius, and then the end of the world.
I saw here in Los Angeles when it was playing there originally.
There you go.
30 years ago.
And the 60s, the late, what we consider the 60s, but the late 60s and the early 70s, was a period when people were much more open about their spirituality, about these things changing, about, you know, of course there were a lot of drugs,
but there was a lot more sincerity and authenticity, too, don't you think?
Absolutely there was. I mean, they wore the most god-awful clothes.
I remember.
And they were just so happy to do it.
Yeah. And free love was the word of the day, and everybody loved everybody else, you know.
That's right.
Male, female, animal, mineral, and vegetable.
Right. And
no judgment, no guilt, no sin.
That was the beginning of this, of all of this. And then we sort of, like, got frightened by it and had to put on a suit and tie and become, you know...
monsters.
Well, you know, investment bankers or realtors or, investment realtors or whatever all of that is.
Yeah, whatever.
You know, stock market and real estate.
Oh,
and
God. You can have all that.
What the psychic energy of the planet is attempting to do right now is to sort of shake some of that loose, so that we can get back on track.
Thank you.
Of
connecting with spirit.
Of connecting with spirit.
Yes.
Of appreciating our own spirit and spirituality in ourselves and our aspect of God. Because we are each an aspect of God. And, okay, I'm a heretic
people?
And I'm going to be burning at the stake as soon as the fundamentalist terrorists grab me. But... we are each an aspect of God. And if you're a 900-pound aspect of God that can't get off the sofa, you nevertheless are God. And just appreciating that and realizing that is the first step in whatever it is. And that is kind of how the planet is trying to get back on track right now.
Huh.
That we're moving into this energy of self-appreciation, self-spirituality, letting go a lot of the restrictions, a lot of the small-mindedness of religion, a lot of the small-mindedness of fundamental religion. Because it's easy for me or for us to be judgmental against Christianity because it's how we brought up and so we react against it.
Right.
But in all honesty... the fundamentalist Christians are terrorists in the same way that the fundamentalist Muslims are terrorists.
Oh, absolutely.
And that doesn't describe all Christians, and
that
doesn't describe all Muslims.
Exactly.
In fact, it describes a very small amount of each.
And unfortunately, the tabloids and the news picks up the extremes because that sells.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, the loudest are going to be heard.
Yep.
And our country, the United States of beautiful America,
right,
is in a stranglehold of karma with the fundamentalist Christians.
Oh, you're no kidding.
And the sorry thing about it is people allow the fundamentalist Christians, in our case, and, you know, in the Middle East, the fundamentalist Muslims, to behave as if they own God. They own God. God speaks to them.
Yeah.
If God says, you know, you are gay, you're going to burn in hell. You are black, you're a second-class citizen. Whatever, you know, whatever that philosophy is that makes people not feel good about themselves, whatever it is that makes them less than, whatever it is that makes them not appreciate that they themselves are God, that is what is holding our country right now. And while we allegedly have a separation of church and state, we don't have any Buddhist presidents.
No.
You know, we don't have any Muslim presidents.
And I wouldn't say we have a Christian one either.
Well, not in the sense of Christ. But, you know, the word Muslim sends a little shiver of fear among Americans. And yet the Sufis, which is one of the oldest sects of Muslim, are the most beautiful, loving, spiritual people.
Yes, yes,
and
I agree.
It is the 800th anniversary of the birthday of Rumi.
Oh, wow.
The most published poet on the planet. And, you know, God willing, I will be the next one. He did nothing but validate your divinity. And that is the literature, the most published poetry in the world. Okay? Think of that. So that is the fine literature that is pervasive in the world, and yet you say the word Muslim.
Yeah.
And people are afraid.
Well, we're brainwashed.
Absolutely we are.
Speaking of poetry, you did mention your poetry, so that gives me a nice way to segue into hearing maybe one of your poems.
What would you like to hear?
Whatever you feel proud of, or...
It depends what day it is on
which
one I feel proud of.
All right.
Let's see what I can
Or you can do something at random.
For
you. I mean,
you
know, a couple of things maybe just so that our audience can get a taste of
poetry.
Say that again?
Hello?
Yes.
I don't know if I'm losing you.
You're still here.
Hello?
Hello?
I'll give you a short one.
All right.
A river runs through the heart of my life. You may think it is milk and honey. You may think it is tears. But this is a river of faith that refreshes my walk in the desert, that feeds my walk in the forest. And when the moonlight dances on its face, there is no greater magic. There is no greater grace.
Beautiful.
That's
Take another
just a
one.
Short one for you.
Yeah.
I had given readings. I did a small tour of like Santa Fe, Berkeley, San Francisco. I'm trying to think of where all the places I went to read. Columbus. And then I've kind of, if you want to write, you can make money. If you want to make money, you don't write a book of poetry.
Right.
If you want to sell a book of poetry, you don't write it about God.
Really?
So, and part of the reason you don't do that is because since I don't belong to a tradition, since I, an overt tradition, that is, since I'm not in the Catholic Church where, you know, the priest and the bishop and the pope can all endorse it and all the parishioners will buy it, I don't have these religions backing me or buying it. And since I'm not in a non sort of... So you can be in a spiritual tradition that doesn't use the word God.
Right.
You know, you can just be peace, love, and macrame.
Right.
But once you use the word God, then you're thrust into the Christianity or into something like that. And so all the people that want to be spiritual but are afraid of the word God, now you're isolated from them.
Mm-hmm.
So I've really done my best to be a financial failure at poetry. Even though I've had fantastic over-the-top reviews.
Uh-huh.
One magazine said, you know, if poets could be rock stars, this is the man to watch.
Yeah, boy, they are wonderful. I mean, what you read was great, but I mean, I can't even begin to convey the delight and the wonder of the poems that I have, you know, right in front of me here in your book, Eating God.
Well, you read one.
Oh, all right. All right. Let's try this one. Yours is the body I always want. Yours is the mind I always need. But it is your soul I always have, like a bowl of hot soup that never empties nor grows cold. Clouds may cover the eternal sky, and rain may cover the dreaming earth, but you and I are always dancing in the perfect sunlit heaven. Did I do it justice?
You did it justice, and I feel like you read it just for me.
No, you brat, I did. And I guess all our listeners are going to be in on it, too.
Well, that's okay, because we're one big happy world.
Yes, we are. And we're all one, aren't we?
Yes, we are. So that little person out there with the TV on mute, making a sandwich and talking to a girlfriend on the phone, that's still me.
Yes. Yes.
And that's still you.
And it's still me. Oh, that's a poem right there. You just gave us all a real poem, living poem. That's wonderful.
No, you're very sweet.
Oh, thanks. Let me see if I can find a question to ask you.
Okay.
Oh, golly. Who cares about the questions? We're having a good chat without them. You know, I had a bad hair day today. I had a friend that was becoming homeless and came to stay with me. And I'm a Virgo. I don't know if I'm a Virgo node north or south or east or west, but I was...
Oh, no, you're a Virgo, Virgo.
Yeah, exactly. And so she came to stay with me, and I had no idea the baggage that was coming with her.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she packed her steamer trunk for Europe. And, you know, we've been together for about 3 days, and I have been through every mishmash of her life, you know, attachments to her ex-boyfriend, and maybe I should be doing this, and maybe I should be doing that, and maybe I'm a bad person, and am I really bad, and, you know, am I going to go to... I mean, it just was endless, and, you know, I did my best for 3 days to try and, you know... You know, give her good advice and just be there for her. And today she walked out in a huff because I was treating her supposedly like a maid. You know, and it was just, I felt like it was just an excuse to leave the house. And, you know, we all do this. You know, when we don't want to go to work, we get sick and we call in sick. But I realized once when I did that I didn't have to really be sick. I could just call in sick. You know,
right.
And so we invent things and we make up stories and we do to do what we really want to do. And she should have just said, you know, Lance, I really don't want to, I've enjoyed being there and I thank you for the few days, but I really need to move on. You know, so instead we make each other wrong.
Exactly.
And create high drama. And so, you know, she had just left before this, before tonight's show, and I just kind of pulled it together beforehand.
Well, you've done an amazing job.
Oh, well, thank you. But, you know, I wanted to share that with the audience because they need to know that, you know, we're all human. And no matter how much you try to help somebody else, you really, you have to let go. And you can only help yourself.
And, of course, if you were a Buddhist, you wouldn't have a bad hair day because you'd be shaving your head.
True.
And the Buddhist masters, there are so many stories about them. And
really?
Some of them are rude as all get out.
Yeah.
And they would have just taken your friend's things and thrown them in the street.
Yeah.
And some are so compassionate, they would have let your friend just run
right
over them until it became so absurd and ridiculous that even she would have felt, you know.
Humbled.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amma's like that. Have you heard of Amma?
Yes.
She's supposed she goes, I mean, I just heard of her recently, and I've read her story in another book, and apparently people just go up and sit on her lap all day long. I mean, it would take enormous strength just to endure all of that, and she heals every one of them. And if there's anyone left, she just keeps going and just gives and gives. One time, I think it was Alma, she had a ring that was too tight on her finger, and instead of cutting the ring off, she let the gangrene take her finger because she was loving the gangrene.
Right.
Is that not, it sounds insane. And none of us would do that, I hope. If you have a ring on
it doesn't sound any more insane than other spiritual traditions.
No.
And yet we judge one, and I'm not saying that you are, but
yeah.
We as people judge ones that are more foreign to us.
Yes, yes.
And the ones that are closer to us, we may react against.
Yes.
But we don't necessarily think they're absurd.
Right.
That's probably not the right wording, because if you really believe in that book, which hopefully will soon be out of print, the one that the Christians use.
Oh, yeah.
That says, God said that you should kill people if they eat shrimp on either Saturday or Sunday. I don't know.
Yeah.
And I think that's when the restaurant has the special on shrimp. And maybe the Christian fundamentalists are standing outside waiting to kill these people when they come out. But in my opinion, I really don't think that God was focusing on that and spending time on writing down this idea that you should kill people that eat shrimp on the weekend.
Right. It doesn't make sense.
And so if you were in another tradition, now we accept that. I mean, maybe we don't because it sounds absurd when I say it.
Mm.
But you put on the television, and this is the word of God.
Oh, yeah.
It's held over their head, and it's shaken at you. And you cannot... We're in a presidential election race at the moment.
Yeah.
And one of the hot issues is gay marriage.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So do we have time to talk about marriage for a minute?
Oh, absolutely. Talk about it all you want.
When I was in school, we learned that marriage was a contract. Two people make a contract with each other. They make a contract legal so that if you want to get out of it, you know, you're going to lose half of your assets or whatever that is.
Right.
I believe that marriage is a contract.
Yeah.
I believe it's a contract on many levels. A physical level, so that you and I have a contract, whatever it is, to have sex with each other and to feed the kids and I come home to you if that's what our agreement is.
Right.
And on an emotional level, that you're the one that I love, and, you know, and maybe I'm agreeing not to love anyone else. Maybe I break that agreement, but, I mean, not me, but, you know.
Right. You would
but you have an emotional contract.
They're not
you have a spiritual contract where you are saying, you know, we love each other, and we want whatever our divinity is, God, to acknowledge that.
Right.
And to witness that we are... you know, binding each other together.
Right.
And so then you look at our government. Now, our government, most governments, and the idea that any two people can engage in a contract, a legal contract, meaning, you know, I want you to be my accountant or my business manager and sell my records or my movies, or, you know, we have a contract, and you get a percentage, and I do, and whatever the terms of the contract are, any two people can go to a lawyer, write out the forms, sign them and date them, and put their thumbprint or whatever, and that is legal and real.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, in this country, to make a marriage contract, you have to jump through hoops if you are a man and a woman. You don't even have hoops to jump through, in most cases, if you are a man and a man or a woman and a woman.
Right.
And if you're transgendered, I don't know what you do. You just walk up there with a mirror.
There are no hoops.
I'm marrying myself. I'm perfectly happy. God, I'm so politically incorrect. But this idea, it should not be an issue.
Yeah.
For one thing, we have a separation of church and state.
Kind of.
So the church, allegedly.
Right, allegedly.
So the church and that book that is allegedly the Word of God,
yeah,
where you can't eat shrimp on the weekend.
Right.
Which actually doesn't say, I don't think it says that two people of the same sex can't marry. I'm not sure.
I haven't seen it in
there. I haven't seen it in there. But anyway, it's, you know, that's sort of the basis of why politically we can't have a marriage, when in reality it should be as simple as any two people going to a lawyer and making a contract,
mm-hmm,
and saying, I want to merge myself with you. My,
yeah,
things, I have a sofa with a floral print, you have an overstuffed chair that the dog has chewed on, we're a happy family.
Yeah, I agree with you 1,000%.
But the government says, no, there's something more to marriage than that contract. The problem is, what is being said is more than a legal contract is something that is spiritual and the government should not have any reign over,
at
least our government.
I agree.
And so this whole thing of the presidential race, where the candidates are afraid to even say what they think.
Yep.
And, or if they are saying what they think, it's slanting so much farther to the right because that's where justice and truth in the American way is standing.
And there's so much judgment around sexuality.
Well, that's a whole other thing. I mean, anyone who has sex is immediately damned.
Right.
Unless
right.
it's, you know, oh, God, the three positions. No, there's only one position in the Bible, I think.
The Catholic.
See, if we held the Kama Sutra as our Bible,
right,
this country would be a lot happier.
Oh, thank you very much.
You know?
We do the sex in private, but then we're in guilt and denial, and then we run around and hide and feel guilty about it.
No, it's not all done in private. Some it's done in airport bathrooms.
Oh, yes, senators. Excuse me.
And what is his punishment now?
Yes.
His punishment is that he has to have sex with his wife.
And then he reneged on his resignation, and I think he's trying to go back into his business after getting caught with his pants down, literally.
You know what?
What?
My philosophy is, if you had told people that you wanted to have sex in airport bathrooms with strange men,
mm-hmm,
unsafe sex, by the way,
mm-hmm,
and that was your coming out of the chute, you know, tagline,
mm-hmm,
and you get caught doing that,
yeah,
then nobody can say a word to you.
Thank you.
And so if you are open, instead of lying and hiding, which of course are not great spiritual traits anyway,
mm-hmm,
if spirituality is what you're trying to uphold,
mm-hmm,
then you're just making a mess of your life and a bad example for everyone else, and you are supposed to be ruling,
mm-hmm,
or, you know, governmental. So in some way an example for people, and some way setting up things so that life is better for people.
Yeah.
And in reality, you are contributing to making life more difficult for people.
Thank you. I'd rather hear the truth.
If you think about being a teenager, you know, we think of, oh, this is when everyone's beautiful.
Right.
Okay. Well, they have no intestines. They have the flattest stomachs. I don't know how.
Well, yeah, I guess I did.
You know, it's. I don't know how that happens, but anyway.
Yeah.
And yet, being a teenager is maybe the most difficult time of your life because of all your angst, of all your mental, machinations. And does he like me? Does she like me? Am I wearing the right shirt? You know, am I in the right club? Did I eat the right food at the right pace? And then you put on top of that you are not supposed to be gay.
Yeah.
Okay,
wow.
So you're taking the most difficult, and you're heaping bullshit onto it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, of course, if you're wearing the right shirt, that is bullshit.
Right.
But in some ways, that's minor, because it's not about you yourself.
Right.
Whereas the book people, well, we'll just call it the book people, because that way we don't give it any energy by actually naming it, try to convince you, and do a very good job of it in a lot of cases, that you are inferior and will burn in hell.
Yeah.
And there is not pimple cream enough in the world to cure that teenage problem.
Thank you. You know what? We could go on another hour on that subject.
Yes, absolutely, we could.
And maybe we should. You know, I think that warrants, we should address that, because I think it's something that we need to talk about.
Well.
So I'd love to have you back, Roy.
Thank you very much.
And because, you know, it's a subject near and dear to my heart. And in the meantime, how can our listeners reach you, and what is your website address?
I have a couple of websites.
Okay, go ahead.
One is royanthonyshabla.com.
Okay.
And that's a portal for just about everything.
Okay.
If you want to look at my spiritual remedies, which we didn't have the opportunity to talk about, but they're really powerful and effective, you go to blessthebody.com.
Okay.
And sort of the mother website is blesstheworld.com.
Wonderful. Roy, you have been absolutely magnificent tonight, and I want to thank you from my heart.
Thank you so much.
And thank all you all, the listeners, for listening, and I love you all, and I love you too, Roy.
Thank you.
And many blessings.
Back at you.
Okay.
All right, bye-bye.